This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Vantage Health Plan provide signature support for our program. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin today with Alex Martin, the chief print editor of the Wall Street Journal, New Orleans native, graduate of Holy Cross High School and Louisiana State University. Alex was editor of the Reveille 40 years ago, exactly the spring of 1981, and I served as his sports editor 40 years ago in the bowels of Tiger Stadium, where we were putting out a paper in the wee hours of the morning. But Alex has gone on to great things in the center of the universe, New York City, twice a Pulitzer winner at Newsday and with the Wall Street Journal. And good morning to you, Alex Martin.
Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Doing well. Here we are in a pandemic, 10 months into a pandemic that has taken 385,000 American lives, and we're also 8 days away from a changing of the guard with the presidency. When you and I were at the Reveille 40 years ago, we saw Ronald Reagan take the mantle from Jimmy Carter on January 20th of 1981. 40 years later, it will not be the same kind of transition. Donald Trump has fought this to the bitter end, and last week it resulted in this riot on the Capitol. And Alex Martin, the Wall Street Journal, which has been a friend to the president on its editorial pages, actually called for the president to leave. Were you surprised at your comrades on the other side of the office saying it was time to go for a president that the newspaper is largely supported?
Well, one thing I want to make plain is that we have no contact with the folks who do the opinion writing. They have their own setup. They even use English style in a different way than we would in the news pages. They report, our editor of the news reports to the publisher of the newspaper, Almar Latour, and Paul Gigot, who runs the editorial section, reports them. So, yes, I was surprised insofar as I didn't know what they were going to say. They do have had under Gigot, a reputation for definitely supporting the president, but they've also broken with him on occasion. They haven't been as slavish as some of his other supporters. So, I was surprised how that it came, but also in another way, not surprised, because what we saw last week was, who's seen that? We weren't alive in 1814 when the Capitol was last attacked, and it was never attacked by domestic forces. So it was, you could see how there might be a change of opinion.
Today on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, there is a photo above the fold. Members of the National Guard stand outside the Capitol building Monday as security was stepped up in Washington. Security measures tightened in U.S. ahead of inauguration. That's one story. And the other above the fold, House looks to impeach Trump in days. Vote on incitement count is planned Wednesday. Some in GOP suggest censure. Here we go again. It appears the Democratic Party has the votes in the U.S. House, but getting 67 votes in the Senate to convict the president on impeachment, or even to get a vote between now and January 20th, seems a big hurdle. What is your take on where we are? Is this president is on the brink of being impeached a second time?
I think you summed it up right. There are enough votes, Democratic votes, to impeach him. There are some Republicans, like Adam from Illinois, Republican from Illinois, who called for it the day after Kilsinger. So that's going to get there. The question is whether the impeachment goes beyond the 20th in an attempt to, because I think a lot of people, the attempt is to try to deny the president the opportunity to run for office again, federal office again. And, you heard Biden yesterday suggest, is there a way that the Senate could split its duties so that we can actually get about the business of governing, doing things like passing enhanced stimulus and confirming his nominees to the cabinet and other and other appointed jobs. So I think that that's going to be sorted out. I find it difficult to believe that we'll get to a trial, but I mean, that's just a guy's opinion who's reading the news. It's not based on anything that isn't available to the rest of the people listening here.
877-217-5757 for Alex Martin, the chief print editor of the Wall Street Journal, local guy who made good, and he's been in New York now for more than a few decades covering the news. As we've noted in the past, Donald Trump's not particularly popular in his hometown. He received 22.6% of the votes in New York City, which may explain why he is listed on the ballot now as a Floridian. And Alex, in New York City, you probably get a totally different perspective when you go out in the public at large, because in Louisiana, the president won here by about 400,000 votes in Louisiana, although he did lose the city of Baton Rouge, as he did lose in New Orleans, and lost pretty resoundingly in both cities. But nonetheless, in the South, the SEC, which reigned supreme last night with Alabama beating Ohio State, in the 11 SEC states, he's 21-1 as far as two elections in carrying those states, the one exception being Georgia, and that was a very thin margin. As we know now, 11,780 votes. Why has the country become so fractured as far as one region being in one camp or one corner and the other, and the one I'm in, being largely Trump land? How do you explain this phenomenon that's evolved over the last 40 years?
I'm not quite sure how to explain it. You know, there's been different explanations advanced, right? There's the economic explanation advanced that we saw, you know, why certain swing states like Pennsylvania had been in Trump's column in 2016. You know, the feeling of being left behind by the, you know, by the economy, by largely white working class people. There's certainly a big chunk of those in the South that tends to be poorer in many places. So maybe there's that. There's other people who say it's the racial divide. That is, I think, probably a part of it. And we see some of the people who have rallied to the president's side are explicitly white nationalists. Not by any means everybody. I mean, look, I live in a world where I know both kinds of people. The county I live in on Long Island, Trump carried both times, and he carried it this time by just a hair. So in my daily life, I haven't been in New York City in since March 13th of last year, thanks to the pandemic. So in my daily life, I run into people of both kinds. In my life on social media, you can imagine I have friends and family who are ardent Trump supporters, and I have friends and probably not a lot of family, but some who are Biden and other kinds of to the left of Biden supporters. And I think a lot of the discussion becomes reductive, especially in the age of yelling at one another on social media.
Well, this election was clearly not stolen. In fact, it was not a close election. It was an electoral, as far as actual votes, landslide, more than 7 million ahead. Biden was over Trump. And even in the Electoral College, 306 to 232. Mm-hmm. And it's gone before one court after another with many conservative justices, judges, and everyone has thrown it back, saying this is not valid. And yet we had this riot at the Capitol. It appears that logic has been left behind, and that people are doing this solely on emotion. And they're doing it largely because they are devoted to the president, who continues to say the election was stolen. What has happened to our country as far as the inability to accept reality in this case?
I think it's multiple things. I mean, if you think about it, when we were growing up, there were limited sources of national news, right? you had the wire services. You had, for people like us who didn't live in New York City or in a place where there's multiple national news outlets. And there were the networks. And that was it. And they tended, and because the networks and through their owned and operated stations were forced to, because they're using our airwaves, were forced to be more balanced and, through the Fairness Doctrine and other reasons. The news was much more agreed upon. Today, the news is less agreed upon. You can go shop for the outlet where you want to find the things that reinforce your pre-existing biases.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. We will take some calls for Alex Martin, chief print editor of the Wall Street Journal by way of New Orleans. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A bit more time with Alex Martin, the chief print editor of the Wall Street Journal, one of the great newspapers in the world and has the largest circulation, I believe, of any U.S. newspaper. And went to Albertsons this morning and got my copy for $4. And Alex Martin is a guy who calls it down the line. He has personal opinions, as we all do, but at the news pages of the Wall Street Journal don't lean left or right. It's just the news. The editorial page leans right, just as the New York Times editorial page largely leans left. But the news is not fake, believe me, and unfortunately it has been portrayed as such by the president. 877-217-5757. Bill Huey writes, he says it's two-thirds of the senators voting in an impeachment, not two-thirds of the Senate. So if some senators did not show up, the configuration could change. And conceivably, if all the Republicans stayed away, the Democrats could convict the president on articles of impeachment. But that is unlikely. If there's ever a vote that a senator does not want to miss, that would be the one. 877-217-5757 for Alex Martin. Let's go to David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. President Trump never said he would ever agree to a peaceful transition of power. President Trump told the Proud Boys to stand down and stand by. A police officer in Washington was killed because someone hit him in the head with a fire extinguisher, and he died. That may as well have been at the hand of Donald Trump himself. How could not every Republican right now be calling for his immediate removal from office?
All right. Well, there are some who are. But Donald Trump is very popular with his base. And Alex, is this to the point where it's no longer a close call, that the president's actions are so egregious that even those who support him, for example, Lindsey Graham, sounds like he's ready for him to go. Even those who support him may say, look, it's enough. It's time to go one way or the other. What do you think?
I think the thing that that complicates the issue is that he's about to be out of office, right? He's gone in next Wednesday at noon. So there's that out for people, and you see it already. The notion of, well, why should we do this? Let's start the healing. Our country is so divided. Now, the pushback on the other side is, well, if we don't hold people accountable for something as egregious as attacking the seat of American democracy, then we only encourage people when they're upset about an election result to do similar violent acts. And that's where we are. And, there's no denying that the police officer, who was a Trump supporter, was doing his duty and trying to stop people from entering the seat of American democracy. The mob attacked him, and he died from the injuries he sustained in that attack. There is no doubt that a woman was shot to death, a rioter, as she tried to break into an area that was only feet away from, the speaker's lobby, which leads right onto the floor where they were sheltering members of the House. And these things happened. And we're going to have to reckon with them some way as a country. And are we going to reckon with them through an impeachment trial? Are we going to reckon with them through congressional investigations afterwards? How are we going to reckon with them? How are we going to discourage people from acting out in a way that we haven't ever seen in this country? You know, I mean, well, hell, we had a civil war. So, but, you know, even when Lincoln took over, that was back in March of 1861, was before it was moved to January. You know, even then, there wasn't an attempt to stop him from being president. There was an attempt to leave the Union.
Well, the president has been stifled since Friday with his Twitter account being taken away from him. And as a result, he's been largely silent. That has been his method of communication for most of his time in office. And Matt Doyle, our producer, pulled up this cut from Hogan Gidley, who's a spokesperson for the president. And let's listen to him. He was on one of those shows that specializes in getting reactions from the president's camp and, quote, the other side. But here we are with Hogan Gidley talking about what's happened to the president without Twitter.
With the social media crackdown, does he feel emasculated, especially as he heads out of office?
Look, I wouldn't say emasculated. I mean, if the most masculine person I think to ever hold the White House is the president of the United States. But
all right. Now, some would disagree with that, including yours truly. But the president, for a guy who talks tough, he creates most of his havoc when others are doing it for him. And when he's on his phone, presumably is sending out these tweets. This is a new day. Who would have thought we would be here when we were together in 1981, Alex? But the president, without Twitter, he's a different man, isn't he?
He seems to be. And, you know, he doesn't have the ability to speak directly to his most impassioned audience, right? However, as countless people have pointed out in the last few days, all he has to do is walk downstairs and flip on the lights, and there's going to be tons of people showing up with cameras and notebooks ready to say, to report what he has to say. Pardon me. He can choose to answer questions. Now, I don't think he wants to answer questions. That's pretty obvious. I don't think anybody, any politician in his situation would want to answer questions. But he can communicate with the world. Is chosen not to.
Rebel in Sherwood. Rebel, you're on Talk Louisiana with Alex Martin. Hi, Rebel.
Emma, hi. Thank you so much, Jim, and thank you, Mr. Martin. My question is about the liberal media, that the liberal bias in the media that they always claim to have.
All right. Is there a liberal bias in the media that affects reporting? I guess that's two questions. Is there a liberal bias, number one? And secondly, even if people do feel one way or think one way, does that mean it affects the way they write and speak about the matters of the world? What do you think?
Is there a liberal bias in the media?
There is?
No, I'm asking, I'm pondering that. I would say that there are more people who are reporters and editors who lean left than right that I have met in my years in journalism. To extrapolate that.
Okay. I think we lost Alex for a moment. Let's see if we can get it back. 877-217-5757 is your number. I did want to note yesterday on this show, Scott Wilfong was talking about the alleged fraud in Michigan and talking about how people voted for president and then didn't vote for any other items on the ballot. And there was a U.S. Senate race in the great state of Michigan as well between Gary Peters and John James. Well, in Michigan, 5,538,212 people voted for president, and that includes Trump, Biden, and all the others. And for the Senate, 5,479,708 people voted. So there's a difference of 58,504. those who voted for president than vote for anything else. And so that's not even close to the margin of victory for Biden, which was over 150,000 in Michigan. And in Louisiana, 2,148,062 voted for president and 2,033,160 voted for Senate. So a difference of 115,000 almost in Louisiana, a much bigger difference in Louisiana than in Michigan, in a much smaller state with fewer people voting. So the percentage was significantly different. More people in Louisiana sat on the sidelines. So does that mean there was election fraud in Louisiana? The states that were chosen were only the states won by Joe Biden. Louisiana's not on that list. We'll talk more with Alex Martin when we return after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Alex Martin is back with us, chief print editor for the Wall Street Journal. James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on Talk Louisiana with Alex. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Jim, and to your guest. You know, during Trump's presidency, he kept attacking the so-called mainstream media relentlessly. He said all they put out was fake news. He would point to the cameras in the back of the rallies. Turner, he says, look, there they are, CNN, MSNBC. He even called the media, at least the mainstream media, the enemy of the people. Well, I saw where a New York Times reporter by the name of Erin Schaff was attacked, her equipment destroyed during the December 6th terrorism riot by Trump supporters. What he has created is a hostile environment for the media, and I think it's very, very dangerous. Calling them the enemy of the people, that's what dictators and tyrannists have done.
All right. I think it's January 6th. James is talking about the riot last Wednesday, of course. And Alex, some reporters were in harm's way and continued to report. And sometimes when you're carrying a microphone or a notepad, it can be a dangerous place. What are your thoughts about this attack on the media as though they are enemies of the state? What do you think?
Well, obviously, I don't think we're the enemies of the state. I think we're one of the things that help keep the state honest. That being said, it was dangerous and it was hairy for people who were there. We did not have reporters inside of the Capitol at that moment, but we had reporters who were outside who had been following the what started up. Look, they weren't a mob when they were down in front of the White House. That was a protest. They were protesters. They became a mob when they got to the Capitol and attacked the building and the people in it. So, you know, that's where it moved from legitimate political protest to political violence. And, you know, our reporters luckily and were safe, stayed safe during it, but they were menaced and they did feel uncomfortable while this was going on. Mm-hmm. And inside, if you've seen some of the, tweets from people who were hunkered down in the galleries of the House, reporters, and also from, seeing some of the footage from some reporters who were in the halls at the time. And as the caller pointed out, the New York Times photographer who was accosted, you can tell just, and of course somebody etched in the door, I think it was Kill the Media. So you can tell the kind of situation that's been fomented by the constant attacks on the press.
877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Alex Martin, and we'd like to address a few more topics with him. And we're talking about the attack on the media and the so-called liberal media. The New York Times, as I noted, its editorial page is left, but they do have some conservatives who write for the Times, including Brett Stevens, who used to be with Alex at the Wall Street Journal, and today he says the GOP will be tainted and crippled for years if it stands by Trump now. In Louisiana, even after the riot, we had Senator John Kennedy, Congressman Garrett Graves, Congressman Steve Scalise, Congressman Mike Johnson, Congressman Clay Higgins all vote to negate the election. Will they be held accountable, or will a few months from now this be a story that's long forgotten? How do you think this story will resonate moving forward, Alex?
I think it would be difficult to hold people in a state like Louisiana accountable, don't you?
Well, I think in some
given the margins.
That's why Kennedy and Graves split the baby and each voted for to negate one state and preserve another is because they want to have it both ways. But you can't have it both ways. And in this case, there was no election fraud. And
that's the thing, right? I mean, let's just resume that. We've done extensive reporting. This is not, we're not some arm of the Democratic Party or Joe Biden's camp. The person who owns us would never be identified as a fan of left-leaning politics, right?
Right.
So we have found no evidence of widespread voter fraud. None. The courts have found no evidence. They have listed, and all the dismissals have not merely been for quote-unquote technicalities. You ever notice how when the law goes against people, it's a technicality, but when it goes for them, it's the law? So it wasn't because of standing. It was because they listened, they looked at these affidavits in places like Michigan and Arizona and Nevada and found them not to be credible. And that's what's happened, right? We've had that go on. We've vetted this election. And we vetted it at the state level, which is where elections are controlled.
James,
and he didn't win.
He didn't win. He lost, and he lost by a big margin. James in Prairieville. James, you're on with Alex Martin. Hi, James.
Hey, thank you for letting me join the conversation. The thing is that when you flip over to conservative media outlets, you don't hear anyone speaking this clearly about how the election turned out and that the reporting is fair and that, you know, these reporters aren't bought off. That is not what you hear. All you hear is Black Lives Matter, Antifa. You know, these people, they come into the protests that turned into a mob, and it was their fault.
All right. Thank you, James. There is a lot of that, Alex, and let's not confuse these cable channels with the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Those are highly partisan, and in the process of being partisan, sometimes reality is lost, sometimes facts are thrown out the window, and for those supportive of the president, facts in many cases have been thrown out the window because they want him to win, and they refuse to accept anything other than the fact that he did win and was robbed. But, Alex, this is a president who, when he ran against Ted Cruz in Iowa, he lost there and said it was rigged. On Election Eve, mm-hmm. when he thought he was going to lose to Hillary Clinton, he said it was a rigged election. He will never accept defeat. It's not in his DNA, and he's not very good at counting votes.
You know, look, there's always, in close elections, there's always some group of the people on the losing side who resist, right? Like in 2000 or in 2004. But it's not the person at the head of the ticket. Most of the people who've been at the head of tickets have understood, have come up through party politics. They understand, they're beholden to, in some ways, to people who have put them there, or they have hopes for the party's future. That's not the case with Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump's party is Donald Trump. And so the kinds of pressure that has been exerted on people at the top of tickets in the past in order to have them, acknowledge reality and move on and do the peaceful transfer of power that we've been so proud of until this year, is absent now,
David,
as well as all the things that you've just brought up.
David in Shenandoah. David, you're on with Alex. Hi, David.
Good morning, Jim. Alex, I was going to say I've observed several video on social media where the Capitol Police were opening the barricades and urging the people to go in and actually directing them. But there are other videos that suggest something else, that there were people trying to lead them away from the congressmen or the senators, et cetera.
All right. Were there some Capitol Police?
I think that's a complicated issue. And because, as you saw last night when it came out that two people had been suspended and a dozen or so being investigated on the Capitol Police force, I read this in the Washington Post. They interviewed another officer who said the guy who put on the MAGA hat was actually using it as a way to persuade people to let him get to some injured officers and trapped officers and lead them out. So I think we have to ask these questions. We have to be careful not to jump to conclusions, because especially while there's anger and fear, and try to find out what people were doing and why they thought they were doing it. And I'm sure there may be some people who we find were derelict in their duties or even complicit with the.
All right. Max in Prairieville. Max, please be brief. You're on with Alex. Hi, Max.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Just amongst everything else that happened last week, do you think that Trump actually directed the Capitol Police to not accept the National Guard from Maryland who wanted to come over, or did he direct somebody to not let them come?
All right. Was the president complicit in this some way, or is that a stretch of reality? What do you
know? He wasn't complicit with the Capitol Police, because the Capitol Police are under a whole different command structure, right? It's the Capitol. But on the other hand, there's been some reporting, and that shows that there was a delay. I think to try to understand what's going on in the president's mind, we have had no reporting that says he came out and said, I'll let him twist or anything like that. So, again, I think that's an area for more probing and less speculation.
Alex Martin, thank you for spending some time with us today. We'll be calling again, I'm sure, and it's always a delight to get your views. Appreciate you, and congratulations on your continuing success. And congratulations on 39 years of marriage to the beautiful Lisa Shelp Barton. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
See you soon.